This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's one of those words that's hard to escape these days. Blog is a noun and a verb. It's also a contraction. It's short for weblog. Coined in 1997, blog describes a personal website where a writer posts his or her own thoughts about virtually anything. There are blogs about food, cars, baseball, even blogs about blogs. A few bloggers became pretty well known to the general public, Matt Drudge and Andrew Sullivan, to name just two. But for the most part, these modern-day diaries weren't taken all that seriously, mostly because the audience that actually visited these sites was tiny. Well, the readership is still small, but growing, and a lot of organizations are adopting blogs as a new way to communicate. Many more traditional media outlets, such as MSNBC and the Dallas Morning News, now include blogs as part of their editorial operations. Military blogs, or MIL blogs, offer folks at home first-person accounts from the front lines. And in politics, candidates and campaigns have blogs. The Democrats say they will offer a handful of bloggers media credentials for next month's convention in Boston. Later in the program, the logistics of tracking down terrorists through their websites. But first, bloggers and their blogs. If you write a blog, call in and tell us why. If you're a reader of blogs, what's the attraction? Or if you're bursting with things to say and want to know how to become a blogger, give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Lev Grossman, a staff writer with Time magazine, the author of the recent story Meet Joe Blog. He's also a novelist. His most recent book is Codex, and he joins us from our bureau in New York. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi.
Many of us have heard the word blog. A few of us have actually seen one. So what is it, and who are these people we call bloggers?
Well, a blog, as you mentioned, it's a website. And what it is, more or less, is a site that offers regular news and opinions about a particular topic. It'll usually be updated on a pretty regular basis, and by that I mean daily, if not hourly. Blogs also tend to have a very strong editorial voice. They'll usually come with somebody who has a slant or a bone to pick, and they express themselves in a very distinctive and often very appealing way.
Mm-hmm. And when you say these tend to be niche topics, I mean, people pick a subject area and stick to it.
That's right. They tend to be quite narrowly focused. I mean, if you happen to be interested in, for example, in cars or car seats or vinyl car seats, you can probably find a blog devoted to each one of them. People tend to blog about things that they're passionate about, and often those things are quite sort of narrowly constituted.
Mm-hmm. Now, are these technically difficult to maintain once you've figured out how to do it?
Well, that's one of the wonderful things about blogs is in terms of putting them up and maintaining them, it's extremely easy. The barrier to entry is quite low. So anyone really who has the free time and the passion to set up a blog can pretty much do it, and by that means publish their opinions and their thoughts all over the World Wide Web.
Whether they'll attract an audience is another question. Was there a particular moment that led to the rise of blogs?
Well, blogs have been sort of building in this steady way that cult phenomena do, you know, ever since probably the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the moment where blogs broke through is Trent Lott's famous gaffe at Strom Thurmond's 100th birthday party. Lott made an ill-advised remark that alluded sort of obliquely to Thurmond's political past.
I think segregation is the word you're looking for.
I think that's what I was grasping for. This was something that was kind of a big deal, and the mainstream media really glossed over it. However, bloggers did not. They wouldn't let that story alone. They wouldn't let it die. They kept writing about it and talking about it. Pretty soon, the mainstream media had picked it up again. Pretty soon, Trent Lott had stepped down as majority leader.
So, and that has given rise to a world or a blogosphere that is how large exactly? Does anybody know?
Well, it's really hard to track blogs. Certainly they are in the hundreds of thousands, quite possibly in the millions. I would, however, take issue with what you said earlier about the size of their audience. Some blogs attract regular daily readerships that are comparable to major magazines. If you look at Slashdot, which is a technology blog, they will often draw about 500,000 readers a day, which, I mean, compared to technology magazines like, for example, Wired or Business 2.0, is an extremely large competitive number.
But is that one blog or a group of blogs?
Well, Slashdot is one blog maintained by a small group of people. It's a little bit atypical, but, you know, it's just to give you a sense that mm-hmm. the...
Half a million is nothing to sneeze at. There's
no, it's not.
About that. And the other part of this is as they evolve, as we mentioned, they're becoming sort of adjuncts to other forms of media. A lot of newspapers have blogs now, and a lot of companies, a lot of political campaigns. Are they useful and as sort of this other aspect of a communications effort, if you will?
Well, I mean, the case study really here is Howard Dean and his blog for America.com website, which was hugely popular and an enormously effective grassroots sort of rabble-rousing technique and also fundraising. They got several million dollars out of their blog. We also discovered, you know, as the primaries wind down, that it really wasn't that effective in terms of getting Dean to the top of the polls. However, mm-hmm. it raised his profile enormously.
Do bloggers make any money from being bloggers?
Well, the answer there is some do and some don't. A lot of bloggers just do it for the love of it. However, you know, a few bloggers sell advertising on their sites, little banner ads. Other bloggers, you know, will solicit donations to help keep the blog running.
A couple famously solicited donations so they could go cover the war in Iraq, for example.
That's right. So not so much, but increasingly bloggers are getting a little more commercial.
Okay. Let's get some callers on the line. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, TOTN at NPR.org. And Karen is with us from Tucson, Arizona.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
From what you've said so far, I think you're construing the definition of blog a little narrowly. Because a lot of the ones that I visit have a very wide range of topics on a single blog, not just one political area or one particular passion. There's one I spend a lot of time on called Making Light that's done by an editor for a science fiction publisher. And she has political ones, she has literary ones, she has things about getting an agent. She has things about Iraq. She has, you know, literary games, and science fiction luminaries will post on the thing. And it's, you know, it's not as specific as what you've been discussing so far.
Lev Grossman?
Well, you know, blogs are a many splendid thing, and they're still evolving rapidly, and heaven help the person who tries to define them precisely. I think what characterizes a good blog, above everything else, is a powerful, interesting, charismatic voice. You sense somebody else is behind the news and expressing it and giving it their particular spin. I think that's what makes a great blog, and I think that's what you're describing.
Is it also fair to say that there are among the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, bloggers out there, some who do this as sort of a letter to family and friends, the kind of thing you got at Christmas every year?
There are, you know, these personal blogs where people say, I got up this morning and I brushed my teeth this way and so on. They don't hold a lot of interest for me. And yet, you know, I have a few friends who do them and I confess that I do read them.
Okay. Karen, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. Let's get another caller on the line. And this is Carrie. And Carrie joins us from Indianapolis.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm calling because I wanted to make the point that on my blog, which is livejournal.com, mm-hmm. I'm able to integrate several different news sources into my friend's view, and it lets me keep up on current news and events from multiple different perspectives.
So you have links on your blog to other news sources?
Yes. Part of the LiveJournal system, it integrates something called RSS data feeds that lets you pull in individual articles from hundreds of different news sources.
And Lev Grossman, this RSS that she was describing, Carrie's describing, that's a big part of a lot of blogs, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of people use RSS. It's, you know, it's a way of aggregating a lot of information from a lot of different sources into one place, which is one thing that blogs are especially good at. I mean, one reason I turn to blogs in my own sort of news gathering is that I got exhausted clicking from site to site to site. Blogs aggregate news and bring them into one place, which is extraordinarily useful.
So, Carrie, how much time do you spend on your blog every day?
Too much.
I think that's an honest answer, Carrie. Thank you very much.
There's an addictive quality to gathering information.
I bet there is. I seem to have suffered from that myself from time to time. Thanks very much for the call, Carrie. Joining us now to give us a firsthand account of what it's like to live on blogs is Steve Rubel, writer of the blog MicroPersuasion.com, vice president of client services for Cooper Katz, a PR firm in New York City. As part of an experiment, he gave up all of his regular media outlets, the newspaper, internet, radio, and TV, and learned what was happening in the world exclusively by checking weblogs. And he joins us now from our bureau in New York. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi, how are you?
You say that maybe one of the most difficult parts of this experiment for you was keeping away from the news. You were sequestered, effectively.
Yes, it was very difficult. The newspaper would come, and I would have—I would not take it out of the bag. My fiance would cover it with coupons. She watches the news, and I would put earplugs in my ears. I would also, at times, when I walked past newsstands on my way to my job, I would turn away. Not try to look at them. And anytime I saw a newspaper, I ran like the wind.
And you couldn't walk through Times Square. I mean, you didn't even glance up at the ticker.
That's right. I had to stay clear of news.
So which blogs did you read, and how did you know which blogs to read?
Well, I went to sources like Memio Random. I started actually by doing a Google search before my experiment to look for different blogs that I could access. So I went to a site called Memio Random, which actually aggregates all different sources and lists the top headlines of the day, but then also links you out to about five or six different sources that are on blogs that comment on those headlines. I also use sources like Blogdex and Popdex and Technorati, which list the top blog headlines of the day, what's being talked about in the blogosphere.
And how long were you in the blogosphere exclusively?
A week.
And in to gauge how successful you were, the folks at the Poynter Institute gave you a news quiz with sections on business, news, entertainment. What were some of the questions, and how did you do?
I got 12 out of 20 correct. The questions ranged from everything about what Jose Padilla did that week to, you know, why did George Tenet resign? This took place at the end of May and the beginning of June. Why President Bush hired a criminal lawyer? What happened to U.S. employment figures? What happened at the French Open? It was quite a range of questions in U.S. news, business news, sports, and entertainment.
Six out of 20?
12 out of 20.
Six out of 10. That's 60% or a D when I went to school.
Which is what I was hoping to actually achieve when I started this experiment. I said that. I figured I could get passing grade or better.
In your analysis, you said blogs are great for breaking news stories, wonderful for the latest entertainment news, but not so great necessarily in business and only so-so in sports.
Sports were very good in the major sports. You know, hockey and basketball at the time were in the heat of the playoffs. I was able to get the information pretty easily. Tennis, I had a real hard time. Business and stocks, I found a way to get closing bell prices, but I really missed out on some major business stories.
So blogs are useful, fun, but not necessarily sole entertainment, or at least not yet.
Well, they are. I think they are sole entertainment, but I think they're not sole news.
Sole news. Excuse me, I misspoke. One thing about that is, did you do any research on, you know, how you could evaluate how credible the news that you got on the blogs was?
No, other than just by checking other sources. I mean, Blogdex and Popdex list the number of sites that link to a particular story. So I was actually able to kind of see that there was news out there. I just didn't click through to the link to look at them. So I was able to see that if four or five blogs link to a particular news headline, I could take it that there's fairly credible news out there.
Okay. And again, how much time did you spend each day trying to rack up all of this blog news?
Like your caller before, too much, but I used the RSS feeds to try and streamline it for me.
Okay. Steve Rubel, thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Steve Rubel is author of the blog MicroPersuasion.com. He's the vice president of client services for Cooper Katz, a PR firm in New York City. He was with us from our bureau in New York. When we come back from a short break, we'll take more of your calls and questions about blogs, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email, TOTN at NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing bloggers and their web blogs. If you like to read or write web blogs, call in and tell us why. Our number is 800-989-8255. Also, of course, if you have questions about them, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. With us from our bureau in New York is Lev Grossman, staff writer for Time magazine, author of the recently published article Meet Joe Blog. And we have an email from Carl in Tulsa. I'm sending this message from my cell phone. I have a blog that I maintain the same way. Please talk about mobile blogs.
Well, mobile blogs they're not fundamentally different from other kinds of blogs, but you can access them on portable devices like cell phones and Blackberries and things like that. They feed in almost scarily toward the addictive quality of blogs. They're addictive to write and also addictive to read. I find myself, you know, certain blogs coming back to them, you know, once an hour, reloading the page to see if there's anything new there. And I think mobile blogs just take that a little bit further. You're walking down the street. I wonder if, you know, Blogger X has put something else up. You don't have to get back to your desk to find out. You can just, you know, give it a whack on your cell phone and then you'll know.
Joining us now to discuss the effect blogs are having on mainstream media is Dan Gilmore, columnist and blogger for the San Jose Mercury News. His book, We the Media, Grassroots Journalism by the People for the People, is scheduled to be released later next month. And he joins us now by phone from his home in Palo Alto, California. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Glad to be here.
Now, you say with blogs, anyone can now be a journalist of sorts with a worldwide audience.
It's true. It's not clear that anyone can get a worldwide audience. You have to say something worth reading.
And that's sometimes more difficult than people think. But at the same time, everybody can also become an editor.
The beauty of it on one level is that one's readers feed back to you the things that they believe you've gotten wrong and the points you may have missed. So you can pick up corrections, and you can pick up nuance from your readership.
And so this is a way, the way at least your newspaper is using it, and I know others are in the same way, of having a sort of interactive aspect to the newspaper where readers can get back to you?
Well, I love that part, because if you write about technology in Silicon Valley, you learn really early that your readers know more than you do. So why not take advantage of that and do it for both of our advantage.
Let's get a caller in. James joins us from Kent, Ohio.
Hello.
Hi, James.
Well, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
I'll start out then. I use the blogs. I do a lot of research on international economics and political systems.
Mm-hmm.
And I use several particular ones, but I like the facilitation of the link-ups between different blog sites and publications worldwide. I can go through the BBC, I can go through Al Jazeera, Al Arabiya.
Do you do this professionally, James, or just to keep informed?
Both.
Both.
I do research. I do some ghostwriting and just research for, you know, particular authors who,
interest you.
Well, who want me to look up things for them.
I see.
For themselves.
I see. Dan Gilmore, does that sound like he would run across your web blog?
Well, if he were looking into certain kinds of things, probably more technologically related than for example, sewing.
I don't do sewing, no.
You don't do sewing.
No.
In that case, you might find him then. And do you enjoy it, James?
Yes, I do. I do limit myself to a certain time of day. I know when the postings come out. And I know who to look for, and you know who they're going to be related to. You know who they're relating to, and drawing from. And I know when the BBC comes out with their publications, what time of day, and you know it's interesting.
Yeah. It just struck me, Dan Gilmore, listening to James. Welcome to the 24-hour deadline.
It's pretty close.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the drawbacks of this whole phenomenon is the feeling that one is feeding a beast that is ravenous all the time.
Boy, you never worked in radio, did you, Dan? James?
Well, do you think that, you know, knowledge and comprehension is actually a beast? I find that a little problematic.
Well, feeding the news hole can sometimes be a little bit problematic, James. I will confess to that from the radio side of this business. And I think that Dan Gilmore might admit, Dan, are there times when you're supposed to blog and you're poking yourself in the head with a pencil to try to figure out what to say?
Well, there's never a lack of things to say. The problem that I've run into is just saying, okay, I've done enough, and it's a really nice day. How about going outside where, you know, the real world is?
Thanks for the call, James.
You have a good day, all of you.
You too. Dan, before we let you go, your site is maintained for the San Jose Mercury News. Is your blog edited?
It's not edited ahead of time. I must say, if I have the shadow of a doubt, even, you know, a tiniest doubt about something I'm going to post, then I run it by an editor first. It's just not something I want to do wrong.
Lev Grossman is still there with us in our bureau in New York. This has been a problem for some of the sites, or it's been a controversy for some of the sites operated by newspapers.
The question of
editing.
Well, yes, it has been. I mean, one of the wonderful things about blogs is that they go straight from, you know, somebody's fingertips out into the world without sort of any intervening. Another huge problem has been accountability. When you post news on a blog, you don't have a staff of fact checkers, you know, going after it, and a lot of your readers aren't reading with a critical eye and keeping that in mind. So, you know, this question of being edited and being checked is a huge one for the blogosphere, as we'll call it, and not one that's really been sorted out.
Dan Gilmore, thanks very much.
Glad to be with you.
And continued good luck.
Thanks.
Dan Gilmore, columnist and blogger at the San Jose Mercury News. We reached him at his home in Palo Alto, California. Let's get Charles on the line, and he joins us from San Francisco.
Hello, Neil.
Hi, Charles.
I wanted to call and tell you that you're going to be an entry in my blog today.
I was afraid of that.
It's almost unavoidable. And I also wanted to talk to you about many of the guests today talked about the political or the big name blogs. But mm-hmm. I see the value of blogs in more of a historical perspective. From blogs of 300 years ago, I like to read Puritan journals. And they were little more than blogs, but there are so few that tell us how people actually live. Whereas today, I mean, anyone can tell you how they live. So 100 years from now, I think that they'll have literally an anthropological gold mine of information about how, well, at least the 1 billion of us out of the 6 billion on the planet lived on a daily basis.
So you think the personal web blogs are more interesting in that respect than some of these political ones we've been talking about?
I think far more. But I mean, I can hear people discuss politics anywhere.
Hmm.
But to hear how someone, how they spent their day, what happened to them when they went to a restaurant and got poor service, it seems like, I guess, almost insignificant, and yet it's how people live their lives. To me, that strikes me as being a little more interesting, at least a little bit unusual in the sense that what are they doing? I mean, can I tip my own site?
Sure.
Well, it's jadespace.net, and the other day I took my Honda into to a dealership in San Francisco, and then I didn't have another vehicle, so I spent the day walking around San Francisco taking pictures and just commenting on whatever I saw. And to me, that seems like, well, more what's life out. A kind of a reality show in with pictures and text, I suppose, and without commercials.
Lev Grossman, in that respect, anthropologists looking for this stuff 100 years from now, are they going to be able to find it?
Well, some of the stuff gets archived, although I think that's a big question, how much of this vast amount of information that's being published will be archived. The problem that I have with these sort of more personal blogs, and the question that I ask myself whenever I look at one, is why would I care? That is, I know how people live right now, sometimes I have the experience of getting more information than I would like about someone's personal life off of a blog.
Charles, thanks very much.
Thank you, Neil.
And good luck with your blog.
Thanks. Goodbye.
Joining us now to explain a little bit more what it's like to be a full-time blogger is Anna Marie Cox. She's the writer and editor of the popular web blog Wonkette, a political gossip blog that focuses on life in Washington, D.C. She joins us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for being with us on Talk of the Nation.
Good to be here.
And are we now suddenly part of your web blog, too?
Perhaps. I actually try not to post about myself.
Really?
Yeah, I figure Well, since I do gossip, like some gossip stuff, I try as hard as I can not to make myself a part of the story. Mm-hmm. I figure that's kind of a bad thing for a gossip columnist to be.
I suspect you're right.
Although sometimes I can't avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the nice things about doing a blog is that, unlike if I was a gossip columnist for like a regular newspaper, when I do kind of enter into my own story, it's not a problem. But if I just did it all the time, it would be too easy.
Is blogging your full-time job?
Pretty much. I also do freelance work, and I actually have a real serious, like I do some writing about statistics for the Center for Media and Public Affairs and mm-hmm. their stats office, but that's really boring and we shouldn't talk about it. Okay. No, it's not that boring. It's exciting. It's wonderful. Statistics. Maybe some other time.
Another show, another time. How do you get paid?
My weblog is owned by Gawker Media, which is a very small company owned that's run by this guy, Nick Denton. And he basically has websites sort of scattered across the country where he pays us a little bit to do something we love.
Mm-hmm.
It's a trade-off.
So what does your day look like? I mean, when do you start blogging?
Well, I get up, I read the paper, I have a cup of coffee, and then my commute is the 5 steps from my bedroom to our guest bedroom, and I start blogging.
Is your professional life thrown into chaos if some guests actually come and visit?
Yes, it is. If the dog gets sick, my life gets thrown into chaos. Here, my gosh, I've taken time out of my day. I should be blogging right now.
But where do you derive this material for your first blog? From the newspapers, from television, radio, what?
Yeah, it helps that I personally have a pattern that some of the first things I do in the morning are just news roundups.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a good way to, it's like warming up before a race, you know, it's like stretching. They don't have to be that funny, you know, they don't really have to be a lot of work to gather it up. And then that exercise kind of allows me to see whatever big stories are happening that day. And, you know, mostly my site is made up of, I'm making fun of people all the time. So I'm just looking for stupid things that politicians do when there's never any shortage of that. So
I was going to say the newspapers are a pretty good source.
It's usually just a question of narrowing it down to what the most stupid things that...
And do you look in newswires, newspapers, that sort of thing? Or do you also make phone calls, call people, try to find out stuff?
Oh, God, no. I try to distance myself from real reporting as much as possible. I don't want the burden of having to, like, be right all the time. I think I've made a couple phone calls, but they've never really worked out. Like, my attempts to do real reporting have always ended in tears.
I was interested in that phrase, the burden of being right all the time. when you're writing about gossip, sometimes if you make a mistake, you can really hurt somebody.
That's true. Although, my guideline is I don't mind ruining someone's day. I don't want to ruin their life.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to stay away from topics that would really, you know, hurt someone in a big way. And also, I mean, the thing about not being right all the time, I do try to get things right. And the thing about doing a blog, and this is something your other guests have commented on, is that you can make corrections very quickly and prominently. When I make mistakes, and I do on mm-hmm. a regular basis, I try to be scrupulous about pointing out what I've done wrong.
How often do you update? How often do you go back on?
Because I am a professional blogger, I have a quota, which is 12 posts a day, which is a lot. And I don't always meet it, but mm-hmm. it's not like they can really fire me. So
every night, every once in a while, you find, you know, a 3-word blog at 10:58 in the evening.
Oh, pictures! Actually, funny AP photos. That's my secret to like pumping up my post count. It's like, you know, pictures of Bush with his nose wrinkled up and stuff like that.
We're talking about blogging with Anna Marie Cox Wonkette and with Lev Grossman of Time Magazine. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get a caller in. Steve joins us from San Francisco.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm a big fan of the political blogs and the blogs that kind of look at media criticism and looking at what the media misses, and also you can see some of the biases come out. I found it actually, in kind of refute to the guy earlier, I found out a lot of things earlier through the blogs than through the mainstream media. I mean, for example, when that whole thing recently about Michael Moore's film came out,
mm-hmm.
about George Bush sitting there in the classroom for 7 minutes, I knew about this weeks ago. I knew about the presidential daily briefing and the headline of it before the 9/11 Commission made a big deal. I mean, this information was out there, And a couple specific blogs, the blog called Eschaton, which I think I'm sure Juan Kent is familiar with, by a guy who goes by the pseudonym Atrios. He also is great at raising money. I think they talked about Daily Kos, and Atrios, I think, has raised almost $200,000 for the Kerry campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it a great source of finding information early and giving me also an ability to see things in the mainstream media that they can have a source to comment on that I really didn't see any other place where people could. The media doesn't like to comment too much on the other media very often.
Anna Marie Cox, you were nodding your head. That is a site that's familiar to you.
I do know it's very good, although I think we should make a distinction between finding out things from blogs and having blogs catch things, because there isn't a lot of reporting that goes on in the blogosphere. I mean, there are some sites that do it, and I admire those people that are able to. But I think that what the caller's talking about mainly isn't so much like finding out new information, but bloggers are really good at picking up on stories that other people miss.
And Lev Grossman, you pointed out the example of the Trent Lott affair, again, an item that was out, people knew about it. It was the bloggers, though, who focused on it.
That's right. And then you have the downside, of course, which is if you read blogs assiduously, you probably found out very early on that John Kerry had an affair with his intern, which is something that he almost definitely did not do. But that's a story that blogs, you can really lay at the doorstep of blogs. They did a lot to keep it alive, even when there was absolutely no evidence that it was true. So it goes both ways. You find out a lot of things early. A lot of those things don't happen to be true.
Mm-hmm. Anna Marie, are you going to Boston to applying for credentials for the Democratic Convention?
No, I'm not really. I mean, I'm going to watch it on C-SPAN, like everyone else, or like the geeks are. You know, no one's going to pay me to go. It's mainly a big show anyway. It's not like anything surprising will happen there. It would be kind of cool to be there. But I actually think that the DNC was brilliant to do this, to open up the convention to bloggers, because they're getting a lot of really good publicity out of doing it. But I'm not sure what kind of new information will come out of it.
Because who's ever sure what kind of new information ever comes out of a Democratic or a Republican convention?
Any convention. I mean, it's nothing surprising ever happens. It's funny. I've gotten a lot of phone calls about this from people. And a reporter was telling me, oh, well, I've been talking to bloggers and they say they're going to find the stuff behind the scenes and they're going to find interesting anecdotes. And I said, well, yeah, you know, oh, gosh, I'm sure the editor of the New Yorker is slapping his forehead. Anecdotes? Why didn't I think of anecdotes?
That's also a few years ago, the new development in these kinds of things was Radio Row. What is going to be the bloggers' boardroom or something? I don't know where they're going to put these people. There are going to be one room and that would be pretty scary, too. Anna Marie Cox, thank you so much for coming in with us. Anna Marie Cox writes and edits the blog wonkette.com. It's a political gossip blog on life in Washington, D.C. She was with us here in Studio 3A. When we come back from a short break, we'll take a couple more of your questions on blogs with Lev Grossman of Time Magazine. We're also going to be talking with Gabriel Weitzman about the idea of tracking terrorists through their websites, and that's coming up after the break. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, the number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or email us, totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're wrapping up our conversations on blogs with Lev Grossman, staff writer for Time Magazine and author of the recently published article, Meet Joe Blog. And let's get a question in from Josh in Cleveland, Ohio.
Hi, Neil.
Hey, Josh.
I'm curious. I'm a high school teacher in Cleveland, and I run into a lot of problems with students doing research on blogs over the Internet, and they come up with information that's just false. It seems as though we've run into a similar problem in the discussion here, talking about the accountability of blogs. And I'm just curious if the people there think that if bloggers should be accountable to the information that they post, or if that's not a problem.
Lev Grossman, is there any way to hold bloggers accountable?
Well, there isn't really, unless they're engaging in libel, at which point I suppose you could sue them. But it calls for an extraordinary degree of critical acumen on the part of the reader to sort out what can really be trusted and what can't from a blog. It's the kind of thing that we didn't used to have to be aware of 10 years ago. But it's something, it's a kind of skill we've all had to learn, and I think it's one that's really important to teach to kids as well, just to sort out where this information is coming from and what you know about the source and how reliable it is.
It's one thing when it's Josh's high school students there in Cleveland. There was an article in the Weekly Standard that raised the possibility of somebody setting up backstabbing websites, in other words, a blog that says ilovecarrie.com or whatever it is, and then 2 weeks before Election Day suddenly turns on the candidate.
Right. I guess my question is, do you think it's ethical for someone to not be accountable for posting news to a wide audience?
Lev?
I'm sorry?
I think it's absolutely not ethical at all. And in terms of backstabbing websites, I'm sure not only that it'll happen, but that it already has happened. I mean, this is the kind of thing that it's a little bit the Wild West out there, and people are going to take advantage of that. And it's a shame, but I'm sure it's going to happen.
Lev Grossman, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Lev Grossman, as we mentioned, a staff writer for Time magazine, also a novelist. His most recent book is Codex.